On the job since 2013, Naira President and CEO Chris Kay has navigated the organization through some tough times. The Belmont Stakes is booming, Saratoga is wonderful as ever, and Naira's financial picture looks much better than it did when Kay took over. Fast forward 4 years and the ship has been righted, but many challenges are yet to come. Chris Kay is our special guest on this week's Thoroughbred Daily News podcast, brought to you by TaylorMade.
And here it is! The 37-year wait is over! American Pharoah is finally the one! American Pharoah has won the Triple Crown!
Over the past four decades, TaylorMade has risen from a small boarding operation to the worldwide leader in thoroughbred sales and marketing. Here's Hall of Fame trainer Jerry Hollendorfer.
TaylorMade sales follow many horses that are training at the racetrack, and they are particularly adept at evaluating mares and placing them with a proper stallion after their racing careers are over. They are very straightforward and are also experts on confirmation of younger weanlings and yearlings.
My name is Tia Andrini, and I am from San Mateo, California. I've been doing business with TaylorMade for about a year now, and it's been one great experience after another. It started with my first TaylorMade venture when I bought an interest in the filly Catherine Sophia, which ultimately landed me 3 weeks later in the middle of the winner's circle of the 2016 Kentucky Oaks with her. The TaylorMade team is a group of truly outstanding individuals. They are knowledgeable, professional, and completely customer service driven. To me, the TaylorMade name epitomizes the term trusted advisor. That is exactly what they are, and I am very proud to be associated and doing business with them.
Discover what TaylorMade can do for you. Visit TaylorMadeFarm.com.
And they're off at Saratoga!
Yes, Saratoga's right around the corner, and most will tell you it's the most important meet in North American racing. This is Bill Findlay, your host of the TDN podcast, and we're with Chris Kay, who will be at the helm for his fifth Saratoga meet. Chris, whether it's brand recognition, finances, prestige, whatever, how important is the Saratoga meet to the New York Racing Association?
Well, Bill, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be with you. Certainly, the Saratoga meet is very, very important to us from a number of reasons. Number one, as you may recall, one of our first goals when I started on July 1st, 2013, was to enhance the guest experience, to treat everyone like a guest in their home. And when you have the kind of people that come through our gates at Saratoga and they have a great experience, they're going to come back, and they're going to come back with friends and family. And so Saratoga, being done properly, helps grow the great sport of horse racing throughout the country.
Okay.
Second, we've always wanted to improve the quality of racing, and there's no better racing than you have in Saratoga. So for people that are not familiar with the sport and they check it out in Saratoga, they realize this is really something special. And then finally, it is one of our most important meets financially. And our third goal was to create a greater financial strength and sustainability. And the Saratoga meet plays very largely into that goal as well.
Okay. And Chris, among the people that have been at the helm of the New York Racing Association over the last 20 years, you have been particularly focused on the finances, more so than some of your predecessors. With Saratoga being so profitable, has it been hard to resist the temptation of expanding the meet?
You mean beyond a 40-day meet? No.
Exactly.
It has not. You know, that was funny. That it was one of the first questions that was asked of me when I got up there. And so we were probably a week before opening day, and people were saying, are you going to expand the number of days? And I said, no. And the analogy I drew at the time was that I had been the chief operating officer at Toys R Us.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would get up at 3 in the morning on that Friday morning after Thanksgiving and go to various stores to see people line up sometimes for hours before they would go in on that what we call Green Friday. And there was something special about that. Well, now that doesn't exist. You know, I think you can go in now at 6 o'clock on Thanksgiving night. It was backed up and backed up and backed up. I don't want to change that which is special. And so one of the questions you have is, if you have more than 40 days of racing, do you take away from that which is special at Saratoga?
Okay, now, going back to the whole theme of Saratoga and some of the things that you said earlier, you have a building that still has seats and stands that revolve from the 1800s. You have a tradition, you have a history there. But at the same time, as you said, one of your goals and one of your mandates is to deliver the kind of customer experience that people are used to in 2017, a very different world than even the 1950s, let alone the 1850s. How do you juggle the two? How do you keep Saratoga iconic and traditional, yet modern at the same time?
It's a great question, and it's a great challenge and opportunity for us. And so we tried to keep that balance in a number of ways. So, for example, we have installed over 1,000 new high-definition television sets throughout the property. And it replaces old television tubes. So from an aesthetic standpoint, as you look around the backyard, it looks the same. You still have those mushrooms. But for those of you that are actually watching television, you realize how much better it is. Along the same lines, we put in 6 massive video boards in the backyard and 6 of them in the front in the infield. In the case of those in the infield, they replace some of those we had in the past, and we've added to them. But it really enhances the experience for you as you watch the race, no matter where you are. So that's one way that we've added technology, not in an obtrusive fashion, to have everybody enjoy their experience that much more. But we still also are very concerned about history. And one of the things that we did starting in 2013 was to create the Red Jacket Ceremony. And now we have a home for all the Red Jacket recipients, the Walk of Fame, a place where people can, of all ages, can come to learn and appreciate the contributions and successes of some of the great people in our sport. So it's a nice balance between the two.
Okay. Now, it seems that outside of Saratoga, maybe inside of Saratoga as well, there's a lot of changes in the offing for the New York Racing Association in the future, many of them having to do with the impending reprivatization of the organization. When you came in, you were somewhat handcuffed in that NYRA's under state control since 2012. So first of all, before we get further into the issue, where do things stand now with the advancement of NYRA being reprivatized?
NYRA was officially reprivatized in April of this year. So we are now back to being a privately controlled organization. We've had our first board meeting since then. And so we are a privately controlled organization. We do have some of our board members are selected by elected officials, 2 by the governor, 2 by the Speaker of the Assembly, and 2 by the Majority Leader of the Senate. They're all people, however, that really are thinking first and foremost about what's in the best interest of horse racing, what's in the best interest of horse racing in New York. It's a great board. So the long-winded answer, I'm sorry, to your question is we have become privatized already, and we're moving in that direction.
Okay. Now, how for the people that aren't inside the boardroom and don't really follow the backroom machinations of the business and what goes on behind the scenes, how does this change things? What freedoms do you have or abilities to do things of your choosing that you may not have had when you were under state control?
That's a great question. So we used to have all of our board meetings in public venues. Mm-hmm. By that I mean that you could go onto a television channel and watch it, or you could dial in and listen to it, which meant that all of our competitors could do so. and they could learn what we had in mind or what issues we were discussing. As a consequence, we didn't have a great deal of dialogue with board members. You know, one of the great things about having board members is that they come with a history of experiences that are unique to each other. And so when you begin to think strategically about how you want to proceed, some people in the room could say, well, you know, I had an experience when I was in the pharmaceutical business, or I had an experience when I was in the real estate business that could be of application here. When we were conducting those meetings in public, none of that dialogue ever took place. But now that we're in private, we can say, all right, here's a situation. Let's talk strategically about it and have great dialogue and therefore better decision-making on a variety of issues and about how we're going to proceed in the future.
And Chris, the NYRA's relationship with the state has always been somewhat connected. We used to use the word quasi, and all the years I've been covering New York race, and I never quite understood how all this works, and I'm not even going to bother to ask you to explain it. But now that you're no longer under state control, is there any way possible, or is the crack open, that someday the New York Racing Association could be sold to a private company, say the Stronach Group, or is that something that still would not work under the relationship you have with the state?
I don't believe it will work, and it doesn't have anything to do with us returning to private control. It has to do with an event that occurred several years before then. In 2006 to 2008, the New York Racing Association was in federal court with the state of New York over an issue of who owned the land on which the racing took place. And as a result of a settlement in that case, the New York Racing Association has a long-term lease on the property, and the state of New York is paying the New York Racing Association money each year for the real estate.
Okay.
The money comes in the form of payment from a new taxpayer, Resorts World.
Okay.
And so that structure of that deal, which became a law in 2008 and approved by the Assembly and the Senate and signed by the governor, that's the document, that's the deal that I think precludes the Stronach Group, for example, to your question, ever acquiring NYRA.
Understood. Well, we'll take a look at the future of the New York Racing Association, what things might look like in the years ahead, when our interview with NYRA CEO and President Chris Kay continues. But first, this message from TaylorMade.
TaylorMade, where customer success is our primary focus.
Ladies and gentlemen, we present Harvard of Grace.
7-10, you want to get 10 million, Hunter, right here, we're going to get out of the mat. That's the way, now it's in. 10-10, here we're going to get out of the mat, to get 10. Bruce, right here, $10 million even.
TaylorMade, where customer success is our primary focus. But don't take our word for it. Here's what some of our most satisfied customers have to say.
This is Brian Kahn, Los Angeles, California. I've been associated with, worked for, and been a client of TaylorMade and the TaylorMade family for close to 30 years now. Had great success with them. They've always been transparent and honest, and I always felt I was getting the right end of the deal with them. Highly recommend their services, from boarding, public sales, private sales. I've used all. All have been a success and a pleasure to deal with.
Here's longtime TaylorMade client Rick Porter of Fox Hill Farms, owner of numerous champions and Grade 1 winners, such as 2011 Horse of the Year, Havre de Grace.
I've been doing business with TaylorMade for over 20 years. Everyone knows they are the best sellers at auction, but they have also done great work for me in the private market. They have an unbelievable network that can help you buy or sell privately in a very professional and transparent way. I wish I had these guys working for me when I was in the car business.
Discover what TaylorMade can do for you. Visit TaylorMadeFarm.com.
And welcome back to this week's Thoroughbred Daily News Podcast. Bill Finley here with NYRA CEO and President Chris Kay. Chris, turning our attention to NYRA's other racetracks, just this week it was recently reported that Resorts World Casino on the Aqueduct property is going to undergo a major expansion. And how does this affect the Big A's future? Is there room there for both?
Oh, yes. There's plenty of room. If you haven't been to Genting's property, which butts up with ours, they have a lot of parking lot area. Mm-hmm. And so judging from what I've seen from the artist rendering, they'll expand their hotel and other gaming expansion into what is currently their parking lot area.
Okay. Now, staying on the subject of Aqueduct, and there's I don't know how much you can tell me. I hope you can tell me a lot. But from an outsider's viewpoint, it's clear that NYRA is moving chess pieces around and thinking about its future. And let's start with the fact that there's going to be a second turf course installed at Aqueduct. And that tells us that maybe there's going to be some changes at Belmont. Maybe there's going to be some changes here or there. But let's start with the Aqueduct and the second turf course. What is behind that, other than everybody loves turf racing? Is there more to that story than maybe the simple fact that you want to have two courses at Aqueduct?
Well, there are different ways to look at it, but you never know what the future is going to hold. So to the extent you can give yourself flexibility to productively pursue different options, it makes sense to take those steps. And so as you said a moment ago, we are operating at Aqueduct, and there is greater popularity of turf races. Mm-hmm. Now, at Aqueduct, we had the first limestone-based dirt course in America, and it is called our inner dirt course. And obviously, it's not as long as our outer dirt course. Our outer dirt course we could only use for about 2 months of the 6 months that we're at Aqueduct. Well, after the inner dirt, limestone-based dirt course was installed, it proved its worth. In mm-hmm. fact, there are a number of racetracks up and down the northeastern corridor that installed the limestone-based surface for all of its races on its primary track. And we at NYRA use that same composition for the Belmont Park training track. So it just seemed to me to make sense mm-hmm. to make that our outer track. We could use it all 6 months of the year, and therefore we'd have races now during all 6 months of certain duration that were only available in the past in November and April. In addition, by having an inner turf track now, we'll have two turf tracks, and as you said a moment ago, there's been an increasing popularity in those turf races. So we think we're going to be able to provide our horse players with many more options throughout the entire meet.
Okay. So now let's turn our attention to Belmont Park. And this is a question I could have asked whoever was running NYRA in 1985, 1995, 2005, etc. In this day and age, is it practical to have two racetracks that are 8 miles apart, particularly in New York City, where real estate is so valuable?
I think there's better uses for these two properties than to be simultaneously operated as racetracks. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there are a number of factors to be considered. One of the things that we said in those public meetings with the reorganization board was that if we were to make a decision to consolidate our operations at one track or the other, it would be the kind of decision that would have an impact on the area for many, many years to come. And by the very definition of the reorganization board, as set forth in the statute, we were to be in effect for only a temporary period of time. The statute talked about 3 years. As a consequence, there was not going to be any decision made by the reorganization board as to the long-term improvements of either the Aqueduct or the Belmont properties. Mm-hmm. Going back to your question earlier, well, so what are some of the changes or benefits of now being returned to private control? One of them is our ability now to address that issue in a much more meaningful way.
Okay. So now let's go to Belmont. And just as we had talked about the Genting expansion, there has been talk in the newspapers that the New York Islanders are interested in building an arena on the Belmont property. First of all, is that still something that's on the front burner? What is the latest on that?
Well, the latest information I have is this, that there was a listening session conducted on Monday of this week, wherein 100 or 200 people from the community came to the Elmont Public Library to express their views about what might or might not occur in one of our current surface parking lots. Mm-hmm. And the vast majority of people that were in attendance who spoke expressed real interest in having the Islanders come to Belmont Park. They also expressed interest in that whatever development occurred should be consistent with and beneficial to horse racing, that the whole neighborhood has its historic and traditional roots tied to horse racing at Belmont. And I guess the third overriding concept was, let's get something done. We've been talking about this for a decade. It's time to get something done. I think one woman was there who said, you know, when we first approved a plan for development in this neighborhood, this son of mine, who was very tall, was in utero. So it was quite a dramatic point of view that it's time to get something done.
Absolutely. Now, Chris, Belmont Park is such a unique facility. I'm just picking a number. If you run 100 days a year, on 99 of them, it's way too big. It was built for a very different era. On one day, you need that largeness for the Belmont Stakes. So and I realize, you know, you're still contemplating the plans, you know, whether you do X or whether you do Y. But what kind of, if you look at the future of Belmont Park and you might want to modernize it, you might want to downscale it, et cetera, how do you balance that fact that you need a big facility one day and you need a much smaller facility for every other day but Belmont Day?
Well, there are a couple of factors that you have to keep in mind. And, you know, one of the things I said to you at the beginning of this interview was that I had three goals, and one of them was to enhance the guest experience. Mm-hmm. And there are different ways to do it, like adding televisions and video boards. But you want to have a relationship with the brick and mortar that makes you feel as if you're at some place that's special. And you want to be able to participate in the activities that are going on at that place. And you want to feel like you're smart and part of a community when you are there. And so if you have a building that's designed for 100,000 people, you better have 75,000 people to create that kind of feeling. Obviously, our building was built at a time when there was only one place to wager, and that was at the track, and those days have long since gone. So there are two different ways, I guess, you could look at it. One would be to knock everything down and then build something up from the ground that would be right-sized for most of those race days. The other way to look at it is to take some of the existing building, which has such great history and also extremely well built. In the construction business, we call it has great bones, and renovate a portion of the property that can create the kind of experience I described a moment ago, and leave the rest of it as it is to be utilized on those couple of days when you do have crowds that exceed 30,000 or 40,000 people.
Okay. Again, I know that there's probably nothing set in stone, but is there a possibility that you do take a wrecking ball to Belmont Park someday and just start all over with a different facility?
You know, your question, is it possible? I guess everything is possible. But is it likely? I don't believe so. You know, and I'm just one person on the board. But one of the things that I don't think too many people appreciate is that if you knock down a building, it takes a lot of time to actually then prepare the land for the subsequent redevelopment. And so it takes X number of months to tear the building down, an additional X number of months to prepare the ground for subsequent foundation work, and then it takes even X, then you have the foundation work, and then you have the structure. And you could be talking many, many years.
Mm.
What happens to the Belmont Stakes
right.
during that period of time?
Right. Good
so
question.
It's one of those things where you say, wow, would I love to have a brand new building? Yes. But what happens to the Belmont Stakes during that many-year construction project?
Okay.
So I must tell you something else, which is the great challenge for everybody in the world of sports, whether you're building a new building or renovating an existing building, is trying to anticipate the changes that are available to you as a consumer. I just attended a conference, fantastic conference, out in California, and we're talking about how 4G is in everybody's buildings now. Well, there's going to be something called 5G, and the anticipation is it's going to be available in 2020. So can you imagine saying, okay, we're going to knock down Belmont, and it's going to take X number of years to build it, and we're going to design it with 4G in mind. And halfway through the design process, or once they first started to break ground, we now have discovered 5G, which provides so much more data to all of our guests on all of their phones during the events. And, oh, my gosh, you know, we're obsolete before we even opened, before we even, you know, began to do too much of our building process. So if you begin to think in those terms, you think, well, another reason why we may want to look at this and renovating it in stages, because the tools that will be available to make our building a special experience are changing at an even more rapid rate.
There's a lot more to come with NYRA President and CEO Chris Kay. But first, this message from our sponsor, TaylorMade.
M. Shawish has taken the lead as they come into the final 16.
The main reason we ended up trying M. Shawish on the dirt is he was just so impressive in the mornings to watch train on the dirt. And, you know, he continually worked exceptionally well, showed us that, you know, he was able not only to finish his work strongly, but then gallop out brilliantly. And you know, we just felt like he had a dirt pedigree as well, being a Medaglia d'Oro out of a Thunder Gulch mare, that it, you know, wouldn't be a surprise if he ran well in the dirt. And certainly he did.
And it is M. Shawish, the winner of the Don Handicap. Second on the inside is Taprit heading after front-running Irish War Cry. And they're into the stretch. Irish War Cry turns for home with Taprit trying to run him down in the last furlong. The two of them are now a half length apart. They are clear of Gormley and Patch. It is Irish War Cry. And on the outside, Taprit. Taprit has taken the lead. Taprit and Irish War Cry come down to the line together. It is Taprit and Jose Ortiz in the Belmont Stakes.
And welcome back to the TDN podcast. And Chris, this year's Belmont Stakes on paper looked like a hard sell. You did not have a horse going for the Triple Crown. You didn't even have the Derby or Preakness winner. Yet you guys had a huge day with an on-track crowd of 57,729 people. And I'm going to give you a well-deserved pat on the back. Your team has done a good job of turning the Belmont into an event with or without a Triple Crown on the line. And just how have you achieved that?
Well, thank you, Bill. It is a great compliment to a great team that we are here. So it basically started shortly after I took the job in 2013. And I said, look, I need to be able to have people who don't watch horse racing all that much recognize that this is one of the days of the year that they should pay attention to horse racing. I drew the analogy to baseball. You know, it's the middle of August, and the Tampa Bay Rays are playing the Toronto Blue Jays. You know, who cares? But you do care about the World Series. So how do we let people know that this is going to be one of the days of the sport? And the way to do that was not to rely simply upon whether or not there was a Triple Crown possibility and have that race at the top of an ordinary or pedestrian card. And so I wanted to figure out a way to bring in other great races so that no matter what, there was going to be great quality, great talent, great races. And in my efforts to do so, I met Martin Panza, who had the same ideas, and not only had the ideas, but had created his own event out in California at Hollywood Park, the American Oaks and the American Derby. And he was my first hire, as a matter of fact, as a CEO. So part of what we had to do then was to try to provide a great card. And starting in 2014, we moved a number of races so that on Belmont Stakes Day, whether there was a Triple Crown opportunity or not, you were going to see great racing. But for it to be an event, it can't just be about racing. Mm-hmm. And now you find that to be true no matter where you go. At every sporting event, they're going to give you something different. And one of the things that we thought made so much sense was music. And if you look, in fact, this conference underscored it again, how more and more events are combining music with the athletic event. And so the first year, we said, what can we do that would be special and also give it a New York vibe? And so we have the United States Military Academy at West Point, and we wanted to honor them. And so we had an event with their band immediately before the Metropolitan. Then the next race was the Manhattan. Well, what's one of the biggest tourist attractions in Manhattan? It's Broadway. And so we had one of the stars from the show Wicked sing a couple of numbers. And then right before the Belmont, we decided to bring in a headliner. And much like if you think about the halftime show on Thanksgiving Day at the Cowboy Stadium, if we brought in a headliner, it was LL Cool J. Mm-hmm. And the idea was formed. And since then, we've just built upon it year after year after year. We've also now, the headliner not only performs a couple of numbers before the Belmont Stakes, but also performs a one-hour concert afterwards. So that worked well in 2014. So in 2015, we said we're going to do the same thing, but now it won't be a one-day event. It'll be a three-day event. It was a Belmont Stakes Racing Festival. And it worked. It was great. We keep points and we get to see who were the most successful trainer, owner, jockey for the three-day events. We gave them special awards. And the 2015 version, we had not only the band from West Point, but also their Cracker Jack parachute team, the Black Knights, who jumped out of helicopters and landed right there on the finish line. We had the very popular Jersey Boys cast, who did fantastic numbers for us. And then we had the Goo Goo Dolls, who performed a couple of songs before the Belmont and then conducted a one-hour concert before 18,000 people after the event. And that was the year that American Pharoah won the Triple Crown. And you combine all of that entertainment and all of that great racing, and the New York Racing Association received the award for Event of the Year, beating out Super Bowl 50 in the FIFA Women's World Cup Final that was awarded by the Sports Business Journal.
Great. Now, speaking of big events, and you definitely have hit on what is working in horse racing now. You can only do so much with the Thursday at Aqueduct in February, but the big events are everything. But there's a big event that has not been in New York since 2005, and you know where I'm going with this. We have not had a Breeders' Cup in now 12 years in New York. First of all, do you see the Breeders' Cup coming back to New York anytime soon? And what are the issues that have kept it out of our city for so long?
I do see the Breeders' Cup coming back to New York, and I'm excited about that prospect. But there are a couple of issues or challenges that we have to address, and we are addressing them. First off, as you know, the Breeders' Cup takes place at the end of October, early November, on a weekend that is often the same weekend as the New York Marathon. And for those who have ever tried to get a hotel room in New York City that weekend, it is a challenge. But once about every 4 years, they are not on the same weekend. And so there is that scheduling opportunity for us. However, that weekend can be a very challenging one from a weather standpoint. In 2011, that weekend was the same weekend we had a freakish 6-inch snowstorm in New York. I remember the St. Louis Cardinals had won the World Series, and I was flying back in on that Saturday, and it was the most amazing thing to see all of these trees lose their branches because they all had leaves on them. And there was just too much weight. So having that kind of snowfall is a challenge. If you have a building like we do at Belmont that has no heat, the following year was Hurricane Sandy, which of course would have been a challenge for anybody. So one of the things that we need to come up with, and the Breeders' Cup has expressed interest in coming back to New York, but to come back to a building that would have heat, and we don't currently have heat in Belmont. So going back to your question earlier about what to do with these two facilities and how to rationalize them, that knowing they're only 8 miles apart, if we were to renovate or if we were to build a new building, we would do so with providing heat and air conditioning as part of that process. And then I think we would be in excellent shape to host a Breeders' Cup.
Okay. Now, New York City is the largest city in the country, but it's just about the only place in the United States, outside of maybe the Bible Belt, where you can't go to a bricks-and-mortar off-track betting location to make a bet on the races. That's obviously no fault of Naira's. Everybody knows the story of OTB's demise. But it would seem that there's, even though OTB was not profitable, if off-track betting in New York City were run sensibly and run well, it does seem that it could be brought back and have the potential of being very successful. Does Naira have its eye on running off-track betting in New York at all? Why not?
Well, I think that, you know, first off, we've, I think, achieved a great deal in the last 4 years of returning to private control. I know there were some people that thought that it would never happen. And so we've worked very hard to try to do that. And part of that has been an effort to try to say, what can we do to be sustainable for generations to come? And how do we put the building blocks in place to do so now? Would it be possible for us to do that in the future? Certainly hope so. Would it make sense? Certainly it would. But in the meantime, we've been addressing things like developing a national ADW site, developing a national distribution of outstanding television content. And we have a very talented team, but it's not a large team. And so we felt like it was prudent for us to take on the opportunities over which we had greater amount of control and could have a more immediate impact. When it comes to convincing someone who used to run an OTB not to run it anymore, that's a much longer timetable.
Okay. Now, Chris, you're not a rookie anymore. You've been doing this for not forever, but you've really got your feet entrenched. You know the ins and outs of horse racing. You know the ins and outs of running the large operation that is the New York Racing Association. So I want to ask you this. What has been the biggest challenge that you have had, that you have faced on this job so far?
I think that the biggest challenge is probably getting people to buy in to a lot of changes that we thought were necessary and that should be made. And the good news is that we've made those changes, and for the most part, they've worked. But, you know, the when you need to get government regulators to permit you to make changes, when you consider that we had a number of people, elected people that were had an eye on the sport, you know, the status quo seems to evoke the least amount of controversy. Well, you have to take risks when you make changes, but many times you'll have rewards. And so sometimes in business, the risk-reward analysis is different than it is in a non-business setting. But I'm very grateful that the regulators and the elected officials and our board members did agree that it was appropriate to take those risks. And I think we're seeing the benefits of having done so.
Okay. Somewhat same question, but with a little bit different take on it. What do you think is the biggest challenge ahead for the New York Racing Association? What do you have to do more so than anything else to ensure that it continues to be what we here call the flagship of New York racing, excuse me, for American racing, for years to come?
That's a great question. I think that one of the challenges that everybody has is, can we be relevant, can we be compelling with a public that continually is changing its taste for live entertainment and a demand that it be given to them as quickly and as technologically attractively as possible. And so I think that horse racing is in a good place if we can get our act together, because young people are saying, I want it mobile, and I want it now. And we've done that with NYRA Now, with NYRA Bets Online. We're giving people an opportunity to have an experience in real time that's immediate. I've always made the comparison to baseball, which was the game I grew up loving. You know, you would watch a game for 3 hours. So you had, you'd watch 9 innings to see if your team won. You can go to the racetrack and you can actually bet 9 times mm-hmm. during that same 3 hour window, and you can win money and have a great time doing it. And so I think we've got an opportunity here to say to people, yes, we can provide you with something immediately. You can watch, you can wager, you can win, and you can do it all over again. And how do we deliver that in a way that people are going to say, I like this and I want to do it again? Mm-hmm. And we can do all of that on the phone. But you can't start a relationship on a phone. Just like dating. You don't start a relationship that has meaning on the phone. Now, you may sustain it on the phone, but you've got to have that face-to-face interaction. And so how do we bring more people to our NYRA tracks to enjoy all that we've done over the last 4 years to make it a compelling experience? That's our challenge. And that's precisely why we're trying to get approval from the legislature to have racing at night at Belmont Park 2 nights a week during the spring and the fall meets. Because most young people are at work during the daytime. Most people are at work during the daytime. And so if you've never been brought out to the track as a young boy or girl, how do I get you to come out now? Well, I get you to come out after work, mm-hmm. just the way the Yankees and the Mets and mm-hmm. the Red Sox do. On weekdays, they have their events at night. And we think that's the smart way for us to go in the future.
I believe we may be breaking some news here, because this is the first I've heard of this. How close to you are you to having this wish granted by the legislature? And if it happens, when would we see night racing at Belmont Park?
Well, actually, there are two houses of government in New York. One is called the Assembly. Mm-hmm. And the other is called the Senate. And the Senate actually passed a bill in the last week to permit night racing at Belmont for 2 days a week in the spring and the fall meets. We did not have the opportunity to have that bill make it to the floor of the Assembly. So it did not get passed by both houses during this most recent legislative session. Mm-hmm. But we're going to continue in our efforts to try to make it happen. Because I think it's important to not only New York Racing Association, but across the country. You mentioned that we are the flagship of the industry. And in New York, you've got, 18 million people. We want to be able to say to these folks, come on out on a Thursday night or a Friday night or a Saturday night, depending upon what the schedule would look like, and have a great time. You can have dinner. You can wager in a few races. It's fun. Mm-hmm. And it appeals to a lot of things that people are searching for right now in America. Okay.
Could we, if things go as you would hope, could we see this as soon as the spring of 2018?
No. No, the next time the legislature would even address it would be in the spring of 2018.
I see. Okay. And Chris, how I'm sure you'd have to make some changes. The first thing that obviously comes to mind is lights. Is this something that is extremely expensive to be able to convert from a daytime to a nighttime facility, or are the costs fairly reasonable?
Well, it depends on if you're selling the lights or paying for the lights.
Right.
But the way we looked at it, we would have the state of the art lighting system, LED mm-hmm. lighting system. That would it shines directly on the track, so there isn't that diffusion to the area around it. Mm-hmm. And you can actually dial up and dial down the intensity of the lighting. So you could, for example, have the lights dialed up 7 minutes before post time, mm. and then after the race has been completed, you can dial it down. and then 45 minutes later, you can dial it back up again. So the technology is there that really makes it very effective. The same technology that's being used in other sporting venues and even on bridges and so forth. And so it cost more initially to use those lights, but it's worth it.
Okay.
It's worth it for the neighbors. It's worth it for the fans. And then over the life expectancy of the lights, it'll actually have a return on investment.
Okay. Any thoughts on having night racing at Saratoga?
I have thoughts.
Okay.
And the idea is no.
Okay.
I think there's a very different audience at Saratoga than there is at Belmont. You know, in my past, it was a privilege and a pleasure to work for Universal Studios. Mm-hmm. And in Universal Orlando, you have the number one tourist destination in the world between the Universal Parks and the Disney Parks. And people come as a family for 3, 4, 5 days. That's also true at Saratoga. Our research has shown that 60% of the people that come to Saratoga live outside the 9-county capital region in which Saratoga resides. And so they're going to come for several days as a family for a vacation. And so the intention is for them to have that enjoyable day at the track, the way other people have an enjoyable day at the theme park.
Gotcha, gotcha. Well, Chris, thank you so much for your time. Have a great Saratoga. Here's my wish for you and the New York Racing Association. 7 weeks of glorious sunshine and temperatures in the 70s. I know it's going to be a great Saratoga. It always is. Congratulations on everything you've accomplished. And thanks so much for spending this time with us this morning.
Oh, you're welcome. I have the same wish. Thank you very much, Bill.
Thank you, Chris.